I'm John Kroll. This is a special No Limits. Sunday marks the 10th anniversary of 9/11, one of the saddest days in American history. It was a day that altered the life of this country into a before and an after. It changed the way we lived, the way we thought, the way we governed. It carved out wounds that still have not healed, if they ever will. We will talk about the ways 9/11 changed us with Indiana Homeland Security Executive Director Joe Wainscott, Indiana Task Force 1 Commander Bill Brown, and State Representative Ed Soliday, who was Vice President of Safety and Security for United Airlines on that awful day. We'll also take your questions and stories. Please call us at 1-866-476-3881, email us at nolimits@wfyi.org, or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Now, the day's news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host. We are talking today about the 10th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks. We are fortunate to have as our guests Joe Wainscott, executive director of the Indiana Department of Homeland Security. Joe, welcome to the program.
Thank you, John. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you here. Bill Brown, who is commander of Indiana Task Force 1. Bill, good to have you here.
Same here. Thank you.
And State Representative Ed Soliday, who at the time on 9/11 was the Vice President of Safety and Security for United Airlines on 9/11. Representative Soliday, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good to be here.
I also would like to invite our listeners to join the program by calling us at 1-866-476-3881, sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or sending a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Well, I want to start. I'll start with you, Representative Soliday. I think one of the ways that this is a sort of a solemn occasion, an anniversary, and it's appropriate to start it as a moment of remembrance. What is your most penetrating 9/11 memory from what you were doing at that time?
Well, I happened to be planning to take the day off and was at home when the first airplane hit, and when the second one hit, I knew what we were involved in, and we practiced at United 4 times a year crises, and we had a plan, very complex plan, and that morning on the way in, my boss, the executive vice president, called me 4 times, and each time I said, we stick to the plan, we stick to the plan. Just amazing, whether it was United or across the country, how well people pulled together. What a remarkable pulling together of people, unifying of people. Huge communication difficulties at the time. Cell phones weren't working, so forth, because everyone was trying to call someone. But how we worked around those difficulties stays in my mind. I talked to the vice chairman of American about every hour, probably our biggest competitor. And regardless of business competition or whatever, we put that aside to get things done.
Well, and Joe Wainscott, your 9/11 memory.
Well, John, at that time, I was still a member of the Indiana State Police. And I guess my memory that I focus on most was really kind of associated with my volunteer duty or my extra duty as part of the state police. I was at the time part of the state FOP's memorial team and had been working, had the privilege of working with a number of Indiana law enforcement families who officers had been killed in the line of duty. So I think what my pointed remembrance of that day is understanding and knowing of the devastation that was going to have been validated of the loss of police and firefighters that day. As I saw those towers come down, I knew that many of our first responders had to be in harm's way in that collapse.
So you felt a kind of sympathy with brother officers or brother.
Absolutely. I knew that there was significant loss of life, and my heart was specifically with those families, those survivor families, as we term them, with both law enforcement and fire.
Bill Brown, your 9/11 memory.
Well, at the time, I was the operations executive officer for the Indianapolis Fire Department, which I'm still a member of. And I was in the division chief's office, Chief Olson, watching it unfold on live television. And when the tower came down, I turned to Chief Olson and I said, as a commander, would you order an immediate evacuation of the second tower? And he said, yes, absolutely. And that's a tough thing to do for an incident commander, both of law enforcement or fire departments, to, when you're there trying to go into a structure to help people, order withdrawal of your troops, per se. And Indianapolis, we had a closeness with FDNY, New York City Fire Department, because for a number of years prior to that, we and continually or still do host a Fire Department Instructors Conference. And several of the instructors for that conference were members of the New York Fire Department who lost their life, and also the founding father of the USAR system, Chief Downey from the New York City Fire Department. So it was a tough several days after waiting, hearing who the firefighters were that lost their lives, the 343 of them that we had connections to, and ultimately Chief Downey lost his life, and a firefighter by the name of Andy Fredericks, who was one of the lead instructors here annually for our conference.
And that picks up a point I kind of want to get to, and I would hope we'd get, you know, now that we're 10 years down the road, and we know a lot more about what happened, it's a little bit hard to recapture that feeling of just tremendous uncertainty when you talk about making an order when the first tower went down. I'll be honest, when I was watching the coverage on that day and saw that the first tower had been hit, but there really hadn't been too many reports about what kind of plane or anything like that, my first instinct was to think, okay, maybe a pilot had a heart attack or something like that. I did not immediately leap to the conclusion we were under attack. At what point did that penetrate with you? It sounds like, Bill Brown, with your folks at the fire department, you arrived at that conclusion fairly quickly.
Yes, I mean, when you're seeing a large jet.
Yeah.
Come in.
Well, was that on the second one?
The second one.
Yeah.
You know,
at that point, I think we all realized
right.
it. But Representative Soliday, I mean, what was your first instinct when that was going on?
When the first one hit, the media was covering it. They didn't even know it was an airliner. It was pretty confusing. When the second one hit, to the probability of two airplanes hitting the World Trade Center is practically nil. And for me, when the second one hit, I was in the car, and by the time I was at the curb, my director of security called, and he said, we've lost contact with Flight 175. Mm-hmm. So we were pretty certain the second one was our airplane, but that was just the beginning. By the time I got to the crisis center, just as I walked in, American's airplane hit the Pentagon. And we have these monitoring systems that we were able to look at any airplane flying, all through filtration, all of our airplanes and so forth. Well, we lost contact with Flight 93 in an airline environment. Air traffic control talks the airplanes, so do we as a company. And we watched him turn south. And for all of us, we were, when is this going to end? Is it 4? Is it 20? How big is this? And so processing those thoughts, it wasn't what is this, it's how big is it.
And that's, we've gotten an email question from a listener by the name of, I'm hoping I'm pronouncing this right, Greg Badan, who shares his memory, and a lot of it's a detailed account, so I'm not going to share all of it, but it speaks to that sense of uncertainty and really how that heightened the fears at that time. I mean, Joe, I'm assuming at that point part of your job as a peace officer is to try to help keep the peace and reassure people. How much reassurance did you feel when we really didn't know what was going on?
I think for most of us in public safety, we don't have time to be reassured ourselves. We have to head to try to see, where do we need to be? Is there a way that we can mitigate a potential attack in our area or our community? What security steps or measures do we need to step up? Who do we need to call? What actions do we need to take? What plans do we need to implement? And So the reflection comes later when the adrenaline level goes down, when you have a chance to reflect and think back on the events of the day.
We are talking about the 10th anniversary of 9/11, and our guests are Joe Wainscott, Bill Brown, and State Representative Ed Soliday. Please join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881 or sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. At what point did the immensity of what happened hit the three of you? I'll start with Representative Soliday, because obviously one of your planes was in the air and all of that, so you're probably in react mode, I would guess, for a while and running the drill, but there had to be a point where you kind of closed the door and thought, oh, man.
Well, to build on what Joe Wainscott was saying, when you're in charge of crisis management, and we were a team, the EVP, I, and some others, you have to be constantly reprioritizing, and you've got to handle what is important now. And the immensity of it, when you just, we've never in our history brought down an entire fleet, let alone brought down every airplane that's flying. So the immensity of that operation, and then what is the risk, and how are we going to mitigate it? So you just start compartmentalizing things and reprioritizing, and it's interesting the things that drift into your head while you're doing that, because there's always somebody talking to you, we've got to fix this, the general isn't letting the airplanes land in Anchorage, and we're getting to minimum fuel, what are we going to do with that? You just have to be constantly reprioritizing, and people that you are leading are looking to you. So you can't be contemplative or panicked or anything else. You're the leader, and you've got to model that while you're doing it.
Was there ever a point when you could let your guard down, though? And I mean, I guess at what point? I'm getting what you're saying, that you've got to respond to the crisis, and it's your job to lead, but you're a human being too. At what point were you able to close the door and just feel sadness?
I did. There comes a point when we tell our crisis management folks, when you get a break, take it, because you don't know when the next one comes. So you do go close the door, get your thoughts together, sit for a moment. If you're going to be effective, I mean, a lot of us slept 2 hours at a time at our desk for almost a 2-week period, because all those airplanes we brought down, we had to get back flying, and we didn't know if we had terrorists that were part of that, and we had to have a plan to screen them. So we were constantly working, and we're all human. You can lose your temper, you can express frustration, and all those people are depending on you, don't know how to deal with that. So I don't think any of us here would say it's never happened to us, but you just constantly have to be on your guard, because people are depending on you.
Well, and we went into a kind of alert here in Indiana, too, in part because we did not know at that point all of the planes. I remember at one point there were some news reports that there might be a plane flying around that had, an Indiana site in its targets or whatever. There were a lot of loose stories at that moment. At what point did you guys let down? Bill, I'll go to you.
Well, once we saw the events unfold in New York City, and then the national news media reported the Pentagon had taken a hit, and within just a few minutes, the mayor had ordered the Emergency Operations Center here in Indianapolis opened up. You begin to think, are we next? And how do you start managing if we had a plane, say, even go into the city county building, and you start pre-planning and hope? And back then, 10 years ago, running a disaster or an incident like that, we were not as sophisticated in incident management of those types of incidents as what we are today.
We are talking about the 10th anniversary of the attacks on 9/11. We are fortunate to have as our guest Joe Wainscott, Executive Director of the Indiana Department of Homeland Security, Bill Brown, Commander of Indiana Task Force 1, and State Representative Ed Soliday, who handled safety and security for United Airlines on that awful day. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881 or sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I'm John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host. We are talking about the 10th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks with Joe Wainscott, executive director of the Indiana Department of Homeland Security, Bill Brown, commander of Indiana Task Force 1, State Representative Ed Soliday, who oversaw safety and security for United Airlines on 9/11. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881, sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. We also, reporter Lauren Casey caught up with former U.S. Representative Lee Hamilton, who was on the 9/11 Commission a few days ago, and collected his thoughts on where 9/11 and its legacy have taken us. Please listen now to U.S. Representative Lee Hamilton.
The event of 9/11, huge, almost immeasurable. If you'll just think back to the days prior to 9/11 and what we have done, we have, at the federal level, we've created the Department of Homeland Security. The FBI has gone through a total transformation from an emphasis on law enforcement to an emphasis on preventing terrorism. Every federal building you go into in Washington, you go through monitors. You have security checks at the airport. You have private sector often taking the same kind of security steps that they take in the federal government. So organizationally, the changes have been immense. From a budgetary standpoint, the budget of the DHS is $70 billion. The FBI and others have spent a lot more because of their responsibilities added to them for terrorism. And that's true of many other agencies. We've set up the Director of National Intelligence. That's new. So that's one impact, budget, organizational. Another impact, of course, is just the psyche of the American people. They're worried about their safety and security, or at least they were. Certainly much more they're worried about it than they were before 9/11. In other words, somebody could attack me if I'm visiting the Trade Center or if I'm going about my daily business. I might be shot, as happened down at Fort Hood, or somebody may set off a bomb somewhere. So the security of the American people has changed. I believe today we are safer than we were prior to 9/11, much safer, but I don't believe we are as safe as we could be or should be, so I think we've got a lot of work to do. Now, I'm going to make a statement that'll bring you up a little bit when you ask about impact. I think it would be very hard to find any single person who had a greater impact on American life than Osama bin Laden. One man in Afghanistan planning an attack on the United States that was successful. 3,000 people dead on that day. Untold sorrow, untold tragedy in human terms. But think of all these things that have happened that I just mentioned very briefly. He was an evil man, don't misunderstand me. A very, very bad man. But his impact on America and our reaction to him and our reaction to what he caused has been just enormous.
That was Representative Lee Hamilton, former Representative Lee Hamilton, sharing his memory and his thoughts on this anniversary of 9/11. We are talking about the 10th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks with our guest, Joe Wainscott, Executive Director of Indiana Department of Homeland Security, Bill Brown, Commander of Indiana Task Force 1, State Representative Ed Soliday, who oversaw safety and security for United Airlines on 9/11. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881 or sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Paul, welcome to the program.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Certainly. Your question, sir.
Well, it's a question and a comment. Back in the 70s, We were training Sky Marshals, and they took some of us out of Special Ops, and we were training Sky Marshals a long, long time ago. It seems to me as though we kind of stopped using them. And at a congressional hearing, I remember hearing the president or CEO of Alaska Airlines make the comment that the American public wouldn't spend the money, which would be about $5 per ticket, to have a safe flight. And I don't really recall him ever asking me, as a guy who flies 200,000 miles a year, whether I would like a safe flight or not. And, you know, when this happened, having spent a lot of years in Special Ops, I couldn't believe that we actually allowed this to happen in our country. And I'd like to get some feedback from the gentleman from American Airlines on this, because I'm just kind of curious.
Good question. We will take it up. Thank you for calling. Well, Paul's question, I think actually it's United Airlines you work for, and Representative Soliday, I'll let you take the first whack at that one.
Sure. First of all, the Sky Marshal program, many of us were advocates. The federal government, of course, pays for them. I mean, they're the folks that you have to have a badge to be carrying a gun on an airplane in those days. And the federal government was not very interested in funding them. We had very, very few Sky Marshals at the time of 9/11. Now, one of the results of the 9/11 Commission was they reactivated that program in a much, much higher level. I think whoever said it was $5 a ticket, that's way overstated at what the price for a Sky Marshal program is. You probably get a pilot for every passenger for $5 a ticket. But the fact of life, when we say that we're surprised that we allowed this, I used to teach safety and security, aviation safety and security at George Washington University, and I think anybody who has expertise in this world, in this arena, will say that someone who is trained, and these guys were Spec Ops trained, one of them, Yara, who flew our flight 93, went to street fighting school down in Miami, and the instructor said he was the best he'd ever seen. It is very, very difficult in a free society to stop a person who is willing to die, who has been trained and has resources, from taking a life. I mean, make no mistake, there is no zero. And they have the advantage because they have time on their side. They study. They morph. It's not like all of us in the security community and safety community were saying, aw, shucks. But just by taking their means away, and in my testimony before the commission, someone talked about small knives. Quite frankly, these folks were trained to kill with a ballpoint pen. So I don't think we need to we can minimize the ability of Spec Ops trained people who are willing to die to do acts of terrorism.
And let's talk a little bit also about Representative Hamilton's comments about the ways 9/11 changed the country and changed the way he approached things. I mean, it is one of those moments in our history that does mark a before and an after. We think of that as a break point where people lived differently before then. How has it changed things in this state? We'll take it away from New York, but here in Indiana and in central Indiana. Bill Brown.
Well, I think most of the people here in the state are more conscious of their surroundings now, and they kind of look out for each one of us. And, you know, like when you go to a ball game, a college football game, you're constantly looking around to see who's around you and if there's any packages unleft, unattended, or even if you're at the airport, when someone will leave a backpack and just get up and walk up to the counter. Because I travel quite often with my position, and you'll just see people at the airport, like all of a sudden their eyes will just glue right into that backpack, where before people didn't really pay that much attention to little insignificant items like backpacks being left unattended.
Joe Wainscott, how has 9/11 changed us?
Well, I think purposefully the response community, our firefighters, our law enforcement officers, our EMTs, paramedics, our emergency managers have all, I think, made a conscious effort to be better. They understand some of the new challenges that we face in our country, that we change from the old Cold War mentality to the new reality of the threats of terrorism in our communities. And because of that, one of the, I guess, the great benefits that I have seen over the last number of years, it's not about the federal funding that has come in to allow more equipment or training or exercising, but it's been about the building of relationships between the response community, among the response community, that we've began breaking down those silos, those discipline silos that exist, the jurisdictional silos that exist, and our folks have really begun to embrace and understand that it's not about me, it's more about we, and how we can come together to work together and be better, and we are much better as a group than we are individually.
We are talking about the 10th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881 or sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Representative Soliday, we've talked a little bit about the things that we've gained since then, but what did 9/11 cost us as a country?
I think, first of all, in economic terms, probably the roll-offs are approaching $4 trillion in the Iraq War and the Afghan War. It cost us confidence in air travel. It cost us inconvenience, and it cost us in our, quite frankly, our freedom. I mean, in order to the security comes at a price. And if you look at prior to 9/11, the discussions in Washington were about a traveler's bill of rights because there were too many delays. And about 40% of those delays at that time were security delays. So the American people have said, we'll tolerate giving up more freedom so we can have more security. And that debate has waned a little bit, but it can still have good security. Remember, the goal of terrorism is to disrupt our lives to the point where we will sacrifice something. So I think that's one of the roll-offs that we still struggle with.
Joe Wainscott, what do you think it's cost us?
Well, in some ways, I think it cost us our sense of security that maybe we enjoyed for so many years as a nation, that we were at times almost impervious to some of the problems that were occurring elsewhere in the world. And it brought that home to us. But I think the benefit that it brought to us as well was the understanding, and I guess the new realization of how precious our lives and our freedoms are and our liberties are, and how hard we have to work to protect those things.
Bill Brown, your thoughts. What did 9/11 cost us as a country?
Well, as a nation, I think it cost us a great deal, not only with the loss of the lives and how it affected those 3,000 family members all these years, but the way we do business as first responder community, it's more costly in dollars for equipment and the technologies that are out there. But it also costs a sense of security in the American people's minds. I mean, everyone would look at, oh, that happened in New York, or that could happen in L.A. because they're big cities, but it woke up the American people that this could happen to even a small town in Iowa on a college football game day. So I think in that respect, it's cost us that sense of security that it only happened in big cities, it could happen here. I know, looking back, and I mentioned earlier in the show about Chief Downey, he was at the conference and he talked about the first bombing of the World Trade Center when it was a car bombing in the parking garage. Mm-hmm. And I remember, even to this day, the words out of his mouth saying, you know, it will happen again. Now, did we really take it serious back then? Yeah, well, we thought it would be another car bombing. No one even thought that they would be using airliners as missiles going into tall buildings like they did. So then that's that sense of where we would look out and plan for the future has opened up the eyes and the thought process of the whole response community on how it could happen next.
We are talking about the legacy and the 10th anniversary of the attacks on 9/11 with our guests, Joe Wainscott, Bill Brown, and State Representative Ed Soliday. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881 or sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Was there, you know, in the reaction, I mean, it was a profound and traumatic event. I think all of us can remember just the feeling of shock that was going on around the country at that time. Do you think there were any overreactions to the event, some things, missteps that we might have made afterwards that in retrospect, we probably could have done without? Joe Wainscott.
Well, that's a hard question to answer in a sense that...
And I'm not inviting you to throw anyone under the bus here.
No,
I'm not. I really
no,
am
I
not.
I wouldn't go there anyway, but it's always a normal reaction to say, we have to do something, and mm-hmm. we need to do something. One of the thoughts that I've seen now over the last 10 years, I wish, you know, one of the knee-jerk, obviously, reactions of Congress was we're going to throw money at it. We're going to put money out at the problem and try to help solve this problem. And frankly, some of the funding that came to public safety, we had never seen that level of funding before. And we weren't prepared in the public safety world. We were not prepared for that kind of money so quickly. So we had to... learn how to spend it wisely and how to use it wisely and how to prioritize. And working through those lessons, I think we've learned a lot of lessons about that over the years. Now, obviously, we're facing a funding problem, a shortage. But I think the lesson in that is we need to start out small and then build as opposed to start out large and then measure it off.
Representative Soliday, is there any way that you think we may be overcorrected on 9/11?
Always, whenever there's an aviation accident, because it's so in the public view, the tendency is to overcorrect. But also in 40 years in the business, there's also the accordion effect and wiser minds take over. I think overall, it's good that we overreact a little bit because then we can drift back to something more rational.
We are talking about the 10th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks. Our guests are Joe Wainscott, Executive Director of Indiana Department of Homeland Security, Bill Brown, who is Commander of Indiana Task Force 1, and State Representative Ed Soliday, who oversaw safety and security for United Airlines on 9/11. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881, sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I'm John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host. We are talking about the 10th anniversary of 9/11 with our guests, Joe Wainscott, executive director of Indiana Department of Homeland Security, Bill Brown, who is commander of Indiana Task Force 1, State Representative Ed Soliday, who oversaw safety and security for United Airlines on 9/11. Also, would like to mention a programming note on a 9/11 project that public television is working on, an hour-long documentary that will be broadcast next month called The Journey of the Beams. It's a story about the creation of the new memorial that is being built along the canal downtown. It follows the efforts of Indianapolis firefighter Greg Hess, who is part of Indiana Task Force 1 that arrived at the World Trade Center 16 hours after the attack. The documentary will have a premiere screening at the Heartland Film Festival next month and will debut on WFYI on October 27th. Bill, welcome to the program. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Doing well. Your question.
Well, it's a question comment, and that is, without taking anything away from everyone who works in the national security apparatus, we're always given a scenario where we're in effect trying to prove a negative, if you will. The fact that all of the money and effort spent to respond to 9/11 through today has led us to a position where there has never been another large-scale attack. That's in effect, we're trying to prove a negative, because if you look at the period prior to 9/11, back to Pearl Harbor, there was not a large-scale attack of that nature in that 50-year period. So are we left with the conclusion that Homeland Security efforts as they existed were adequate in that period, and there was just a lapse during the beginning of the Bush administration? I mean, you can't prove a negative.
Good question. Thank you for calling, Bill.
Sure, I'll take my answer offline.
Certainly. Thank you. Representative Soliday.
Well, a very good question, but the fact of life. I used to start every class out at George Washington University, whether it's safety or security, with this statement: there is no zero. There is only risk mitigation. If you know what the risk is, mechanical parts of an airplane, if it's a critical component, we design redundancy to 10 to the minus ninth failure rate. We don't have that mathematical capability to do security, but the security system that was in place at the time of 9/11 was designed around a certain threat analysis. Nowhere in that threat analysis was five spec ops people who were capable of flying an airplane, a complex airliner. Nowhere was that in the threat model. So we still have a large part of our security component dedicated to preventing bombs and those kinds of things, but we have also now moved some other things into the threat model. But remember, these are human beings with brains, and there is no zero. They are thinking things up, and always there comes a point in the history of man where the aggressor figures out a way around the Maginot Line, and that's been the history of mankind forever.
We have an email question from a listener by the name of AJ, or goes by the initials AJ, and says, with 9/11, we lost our civil rights, our compassion, our tolerance. Burned mosques in the country created on a foundation of religious tolerance. Our suspicion of other in this country has created a nativism that is demonstrated in our intolerance of immigrants, foreigners, even our own citizen minorities. Did 9/11 unleash some things that we wish it hadn't in that regard, that it created an atmosphere of fear? Bill Brown.
Well, as a society, I think it did to certain groups of our society that should not have occurred. But that was just part of any society, you know, when they attacked some mosque and did some arson fires and things like that. But after the initial outrage, I think as a society, we came back together as a whole. I know talking with some New Yorkers, it brought them closer together as a community and as a society.
Joe Wainscott, do you think it drove some wedges into our own country and the way we looked at the rest of the world?
Well, I don't think. I think it couldn't help but do that from an initial act, much like the surprise attacks on Pearl Harbor did. But as Bill said, I think we found over time that it's been a very significant healing process, and that folks, particularly in the public safety arena, understand that we are a melting pot, that we do have the strength of our country, the strength of our freedom is in our diversity, and the value that we continue to place and the balance that we continue to place on security and the balance on privacy and individual rights and liberty are very important. And it's really speaks to, I think, the one example of that is as we've developed our Indiana Intelligence Fusion Center, which has, again, helped to connect the dots of information. One of the cornerstones of that project has been a very significant privacy policy, and something that we adhere to, that we've worked with partners such as the ACLU and others on that project to make sure that we are guarding that those liberties and those privacies as best we can, and still being able to provide the security and protection that we need to across our state.
We are talking about the 10th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881 or sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Lisa, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Your question.
My question is, was there any money that was made available to Amtrak? And the reason I ask that question is I live in Indianapolis, and I can go to Lafayette and get on the train at Amtrak, and none of my bags are screened. And we've taken, you know, went for a weekend and had many bags. You get on the train, and it goes underneath Chicago, and you know that everyone on that train hasn't been screened, but yet I go to the airport, and you practically have to take off everything. So was there money made available to Amtrak, or did they just choose not to use it? And why do we think that segment of transportation was completely left out of security?
Good question, Lisa. Thank you for calling. Representative Soliday, was there money made available to Amtrak?
Not very much. The issue with rail is particularly difficult, particularly in the commuter trains, just screening that many people. It's a vulnerability. I served at the National Academy of Sciences Risk analysis group. We looked at trains. It's clearly a vulnerability, but right now threat analysis tells us that their primary focus, they get more press with an airplane, and they try to drive resources to the risk model. She's absolutely correct, but probably next in the risk model is commuter rail and the sheer volumes. I mean, most folks don't understand. At United, we at our peak periods, we screen 11,000 bags an hour. And when you're running through like a CTX CAT scan machine that costs $1 million, you think about the pure logistics of that. Now move that to in the threat model, in the risk model, further down. The decisions in Washington were not to fund that, but it's clearly a risk.
Well, and let's broaden the conversation out then a little bit. How safe are we now? I mean, how likely is it that something like 9/11 could happen again? Joe Wainscott.
I think undoubtedly we are safer today than we were 10 years ago. We're better. Our response community is better. Our intelligence community is better. That said, we face a resourceful enemy who are constantly looking for gaps and vulnerabilities. And so our need is to continue to evolve with them and hopefully stay either in step with them or a step ahead as best we can. But to, even to cite a quote from the recent 9/11 update, 9/11 Commission update, is that another attack probably will be successful, but we're hoping that we're able to stay ahead of it. There have been a number of plots that have been disrupted over the last number of years, and that it just speaks to the resourcefulness, the determination of our enemy to cause us harm. And so that's where we need our other citizens, those folks riding those rails, riding the public transportation, involved in the coming and going of our buildings, to be that first line of defense for us, and being the eyes and the ears. If they see something, they need to say something. So see something that's out of the ordinary, that's unusual, to help be that first line of defense.
We are talking about the 10th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Bill Brown, let me broaden that just a little bit. Is it possible for us to be completely safe? Is that an illusion that we just had to get rid of?
I think it's an illusion. You know, like Joe said, we have to stay ahead of them. And that's what we're trying to do, is not only as the first responders, but the intelligence community as well. And I think to think that it can't happen again is a falsehood. It's going to happen. When? We don't know. We're better prepared. We're better trained. But with all that comes a price, as we just spoke about earlier. And it's been quite costly to stay with technology, what it is today. And the USAR teams, all 28 federal USAR, done with a radiation attack to try to bring enough first responders to the scene quickly to make a difference. You know, it's quite costly, and to have that many responders trained to do that in an efficient manner to be able to make a significant difference in rescues. But it's only a matter of time, and we just hope that we stay ahead of the game.
Representative Soliday.
I think the philosophical question can be summed up with there is no free lunch. How much freedom are you willing to give up for how much security? I think Franklin said, he who gives up freedom for security gains neither. So you're always wrestling in a free society with how much can you minimize the risk by taking how much freedom? And that's a dialogue that we need to be constantly having as Americans.
Have we done a fair trade-off on that, do you think, Representative Soliday, in terms of that balancing act between freedom and security? How well have we done over the past 10 years?
I think we've done very, very well. We could have reacted far, far worse than the Patriot Act. I had folks coming to me in those first 2 weeks, pretty liberal-minded folks in our building, saying, Ed, I don't care what it takes. I don't want to worry about my family. You're the guy talking to the government. Tell them we'll give up any freedom. Now, 10 years later, I don't think there's anybody sitting at this table that's willing to make that statement.
I want to talk a little bit, because this gets to that area, and it's a good closing point. We've talked about sort of the financial costs and the disruptions in life and all of that the legacy of 9/11 has brought to us. What did it cost us in terms of the American psyche, about the way we viewed ourselves and the way we viewed our place in the world? Bill Brown.
Well, you know, there's local terrorists as well, homegrown terrorists in our own society. And I think as a result of 9/11, there's always going to be those type of individuals out there. So that's one of the areas that we have to stay vigilant on.
Joe Wainscott, yeah. What did it cost us in the way we think of ourselves?
Well, it caused us to understand that we are not supermen, superwomen, in that sense, that we're not invulnerable, that we are a vulnerable society, and because of the freedoms we enjoy, we do maintain that vulnerability, but we do it understanding that there's a cost to do that. And, you know, as Bill said, I think we not only face the enemies abroad, but we face enemies within, the homegrown.
The Timothy McVeigh.
The Timothy McVeigh domestic terrorists, the homegrown violent extremists that we're seeing, the radicalization that is occurring even within some of our own citizens is obviously disturbing. So we have to understand we are facing a new and different enemy, and sometimes that enemy can be us.
Let me reframe it just a little bit for you, Representative Soliday. What I remember of those first days right after 9/11 was a sense of the country really coming together, people putting aside partisan divisions and thinking, okay, we're all under attack, we're all in the same boat. Clearly that's gone now. What happened?
Well, I'm not. I see the cup as half full.
Okay.
We have folks who like to show their differences. I spent a half hour on the phone this morning with Representative Delaney. He's of a different philosophical persuasion. We were talking about things we can accomplish together. I think the thing a little different than what other folks have been saying. The great thing is that we as Americans didn't let them win. We still have that positive approach we had after World War II. We've got people volunteering to be policemen, firemen, and soldiers, and I'm still proud of our country.
We have been talking about the 10th anniversary of the attacks on America on 9/11. Been fortunate to have as our guest today Joe Wainscott, who is Executive Director of Indiana Department of Homeland Security. Joe, thank you for joining us today.
It's been a pleasure
talking with you.
Thank you.
Bill Brown, who is commander of Indiana Task Force 1, which is an urban search and rescue team. Bill, pleasure having you on the program.
Thank you. And just a quick word, you know,
please.
The price of freedom is not free. Yeah.
And State Representative Ed Soliday, who also was the VP for Safety and Security for United Airlines on 9/11. Representative Soliday, thank you for making the time to talk with us.
Great being here. Thank you, John.
We also were fortunate to have comments from former U.S. Representative Lee Hamilton. I'm grateful for those as well. Next week, we are going to be talking about how we help the homeless in this city and in central Indiana. I am John Kroll. Please join us next Thursday for No Limits. Have a good week.
Is a production of WFYI Radio, 90.1 FM, and HD1. Producer, Sharon Alseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each Thursday at noon for No Limits, rebroadcast at 8 p.m., and you can listen online at WFYI.org.